This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio talking to you about realharmony.org. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the homosexual marriage issue. This is, in fact, church, a gospel issue. We must be salt, a preservative. We have to be light on this issue of homosexual marriage, and we do that at realharmony.org.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio, and you guys, it is so important that you pray for a burden for the people in the homosexual community. Then go to realharmony.org and check out the resources we provide to equip Christians on this issue.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The culture has a universal symbol that recognizes homosexual gay marriage. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that you look at and say, that's harmonious, real, biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org. Buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy and buy the truckloads. We have a goal of selling 1 million of them and getting this out to the culture. Church, jump on it. Realharmony.org.
I would say if the authorities didn't want us involved in the public square, they ought not to have crucified Jesus in the public square.
Use humanistic principles.
Well, I would say
the same idea.
I would say
same
that.
End.
I would say, what's the problem with stardust bumping into stardust?
In the cosmic picture, no, there's no problem. In the cosmic picture, it won't matter.
No, Mr. President, you are not protecting reproductive freedom. You are authorizing the destruction of freedom for 1 million little human beings every year.
I'm sorry, my friends, but I am tired of seeing Jesus presented as a weak beggar. He is a powerful Savior, and the gospel is not a suggestion, it is a command.
Reverend Mola, don't you sympathize with that?
I sympathize with every single human heart wishing to know the one true and living God, but I believe there's only one way that that can happen, through Jesus Christ, and the gospel is about repenting of sin, not celebrating it.
Right now, you're on the threshold of an amazing adventure. We will explore the spiritual abyss. You have not experienced this before. You're gonna love it.
What's up, y'all? This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com, 1360 KPXQ, Faith Talk, baby. That's Luke Pearson, the bear over there.
Yo, yo.
And, of course, as usual, the wonderful Joy, the girl.
Hello.
Y'all ready to go?
Yes.
Are you,
let's
sir.
Do it.
Okay.
Do you smell what Barack is cooking?
We got all kinds of good stuff coming up today. And in honor of my son, Sage, who's actually joined us in the studio today, 14 years old. He's a history ninja. His favorite clip.
And a robot.
Yeah, the favorite clip we play on the show. I'm going to play it for you right now, Sage. This is just an honor of your first day on our show.
First of all, give an honor to God and our Lord and Savior, Barack Obama.
Sage wants to fight you now.
Every time I have that on, he's like, Daddy, play that again. Daddy.
Oh, my God.
He likes it.
Wow.
All right. Hey, we're on the show today. Great topics today. Good stuff. Important stuff. But we have a special guest on the show from one of my favorite creation .. science ministries. Now, do you know why I had to do that, Joy? Do you know why I had to do that? The informed, only the elect understand that joke.
I'm with
okay.
you.
Okay, it's creation. If I said Christian science or something like that, you know, it's the cult. So creation .. science, Christian .. science.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyway, it was supposed to be a joke. Obviously, it wasn't very funny to you. So spend too much time on BuzzFeed. It's melting your brain.
Or I just know it's really funny because of BuzzFeed.
Could be. All right, so hey, my favorite ministry... by the way, I like them all. I like Answers in Genesis, great ministry, but Creation Ministries International is my personal mm-hmm. favorite. I know a lot of the guys over there. They have just phenomenal scientists, guys just putting out some good stuff. And so I'm going to let Luke actually introduce our guest from Creation Ministries International. You can get him at creation.com. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, we have Gary Bates on today. He is the CEO of CMI Worldwide.
Big time.
And I'm going to read some of this here. So Gary has been speaking on the creation evolution issue since 1990 with a background in management and marketing. In 2002, he was invited to join the ministry full time in Brisbane. That's Australia, y'all. And eventually became its head of ministry. I just want to stop there. What's with all the awesome Christian scientist dudes coming out of Australia? There's something going on down
there. We need to ask Bates that.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of dudes that have delicious Australian accents that also do science and are Christians.
Yeah. Sorry. So I'm just going to go ahead. Gary, welcome to the show.
How you doing,
Gary?
I'm good.
All right. Welcome to the show, brother. And we're excited to have you on. Gary actually is joining us at Apologia Church this coming Sunday.
Yes.
This Sunday at 5:30 p.m. in Tempe, east of rural and Guadalupe, Gethsemane Lutheran Church is where we're meeting at. And Gary's going to join us to give a message. And what are you talking to us about, Gary?
Well, I'm going to basically give an introductory message for folks who probably haven't heard much about the creation evolution issue. I think one of the biggest confusions out there for Christians and non-Christians is that we allow the evolutionists to kind of define the terms, and they'll say that creation is really, you know, religion and evolution is science. And what we try to do is to show people that when it comes to dealing with events, particularly when evolutionists claim they occurred millions of years ago, there's actually not a single scientific test you can do in the present, that is today, to tell you what happened a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So both creation and evolution are really belief systems about the past. And we've already made our mind up about origins, where we came from, before we ever look at a fossil in the ground. The facts do not speak for themselves. What we do is we interpret facts in accordance with our belief system, our worldview, our philosophy, whatever you want to call it. And then we claim it as evidence for, you know, our particular belief system. If I dig up a fossil out of the ground today, you know, I'm not digging up the past. I mean, a fossil exists today. It exists in the present.
Hmm.
But based upon my belief system, and I can do all sorts of tests, and people probably think, well, you know, what about radiometric dating tests? The point is, they can't tell you what happened to that fossil, exactly how old it is. And as I said, if you dug up a T-Rex bone and you believe there was an age of dinosaurs from 300 to 65 million years ago, you will interpret it in light of that. Now, why do people have different belief systems? Very simply, I've been doing this for 25 years, and it's simply based upon what we are taught. That's it.
Yep.
And so I'd encourage people to come along on Sunday night, even if they're not Christians or they're not creationists, because, as I said, I've been doing this for 25 years. In my experience, most people have simply never heard a reasonable creationist presentation. And I would challenge people to say, you know, before you can categorically say what is wrong or right, or decide what is wrong or right for yourself, you need to have access to all the facts so that you can make an informed decision. But unfortunately, in this country, most Western countries, under this guise that creation is religion and evolution is science, creation is excluded from public debate. There are already Western countries like the UK where, you know, it's actually illegal to go and talk creation in the public schools. I could be breaking the law if I was invited to give a presentation to a class in a public school in the United Kingdom. And it's already happening in a couple of provinces in Canada. And, of course, the evolutionists are very much petitioning for a similar outcome here.
Sure. So it looks to me like you're taking aim at one of the things that we always do on this show, and that is that you're first starting with the worldview issue. You made a statement. It's a popular statement. I use it all the time as well. The facts don't speak for themselves. Could you talk to us more about that? Because you might have new listeners listening to the show that don't quite understand what you mean by that. When you say the facts don't speak for themselves, you're talking about worldview issues. You're talking about ultimate commitments and presuppositions that a person has when they come to that dinosaur fossil, when they come to what they actually dig up, or when they look at the universe around them. The facts don't speak for themselves. Talk to us more about that, because that's what Creation Ministries International is all about, is really developing and building that biblical worldview and framework through which we can make sense of the world, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if I could just mention a couple of things. You mentioned about the amount of scientists we have. I mean, as a ministry, we've got offices in seven countries. To the best of my knowledge, I think we employ more scientists, more PhD scientists, than any Christian ministry in the world.
Wow.
Every single one of those scientists got their degrees in the same secular universities as their evolutionary counterparts. So it's not about the facts. See, ultimately, this is a spiritual issue. It's always a spiritual issue. There's only two views of how you and I and the world and the universe came to be. Either it made itself, or either there's a designer, there's a creator. Now, let me give you an example. I'll talk on Sunday night. I use a little example because I like to use examples people are familiar with.
Okay.
The Grand Canyon. Mm. And I go to churches and I say to people, put your hands up if you've been taught that the Grand Canyon is tens of millions of years old and the Colorado River slowly wound its way through and eroded the canyon. And everybody puts their hand up, right?
I just have my hand up,
talking,
by the way.
I'm talking Christians.
Yeah.
So that's what we've all been taught.
Yeah.
So the creationist and the evolutionist, when they go to geologists, when they go to the Grand Canyon, what are the facts? The facts are, for example, there are lots of multi-layers in the canyon wall, and there's now a river running through the canyon. We see that in the present. We can count the layers, we can look at the river, and we can even look at maybe the very, very slow, gradual erosional rates occurring in the canyon now. And maybe it's even depositing sediment washed down from upstream, and we can measure those minute rates. Well, what the evolutionist does is says, well, the present is the key to the past. And he will use those measurements and extrapolate indefinitely back in time, okay, which he was not there in the past to see how the canyon was formed, neither was the creationist.
Right.
But he will use that as his philosophy and worldview to say over tens of millions of years the canyon was formed and slowly eroded. But the Christian, the Bible-believing Christian, should have a different history. And he can read back, and there were eyewitnesses, in fact, recorded in Scripture to a global flood. And we now know from localized events that we can get these sedimentary layers laid down very, very rapidly. And what often happens through subsequent mud flows and all sorts of things, canyons are eroded in these sediments, and then rivers run through the lowest points now newly created in these carved out, you know, canyons. So in a lot of cases, it's the canyon that creates the river, not the river, the canyon. And so, for example, think about the pictures, the iconic pictures of the Grand Canyon. We see millions and millions of layers in there. I think each little tiny lamination or layer, you know, takes about a year to form through slow, gradual processes. So they believe that the canyon was laid down over millions of years. Now, when we look all around the world, we see thousands and thousands of meters of these sedimentary layers. And the whole concept of an ancient Earth comes from interpretation of geology. Now, let's just think about something here. You've probably seen fossils like fish completely buried. You can see the incredible detail in the scales. We've seen, you know, fossilized dinosaurs in the process of eating each other, you know, and they've been buried. So if I see those rapid fossils, you know, halfway down in the geologic column, and they're supposed to be 300 million years old, think about that. The process of fossilization had to occur rapidly. So it makes a lot of
Gary,
sense.
Gary, give that to us. That's an important point that I think Christians need to understand. Hang on to that and then continue that thought right after this break. We'll be right back, guys. ApologiaRadio.com.
We'll be right back.
Buffalo.
That's Luke Pearson's theme song. Whenever I hear it, I think about the bear, Luke Pearson, riding on a tractor, barefoot, with a corncob pipe, big hay hat. Is there, are there, hey, there
straw,
hay?
It's called straw.
A straw hat. Oh, because that's gonna be. He has a bale of hay on his head.
So, which part reminds you of me? The guy on the buffalo or the bear?
I don't know. The whole thing is like talking about a bear and like okay. there's like a big grizzly kind of man in the woods, and I'm thinking about just Luke. Like I just see Luke, just a big leather flap and some sandals and. Oh, that's a little odd because you have like tattoos. You'd be like a really weird mountain man with.
Well, and that's yeah. that is absolutely the opposite of a corn cob pipe yeah? and a straw hat.
All
right.
it's all over the map.
He's wearing a loincloth, sandals, yeah. a straw hat.
He's like Roman. He's a Roman citizen, and he has. All right, hey, we're back with Gary Bates, Joy Temby, Luke Pearson, me, Jeff Durbin, ApologiaRadio.com, and you can get us on iTunes. Subscribe to us. We were talking to Gary Bates from Creation Ministries International. It is one of my favorite because we've had a lot of the guys on our shows before, but they're just super solid and informed. They deal with the worldview issues first. They're sharp guys. They put out some amazing, amazing articles. Jonathan Sarfati, we had on before. He has some excellent books, but Gary is on with us. Gary, we're thrilled to have you today. Gary, you were talking about the Grand Canyon worldview issues, the layers laid down. Could you fill us in some more? Continue on with that thought you had.
Okay. Well, let's make the point that everybody's been exposed to those ideas, those teachings, and you're all familiar with an iconic picture used to support evolution, which is the geologic column.
Right.
And it's kind of used like an index. So, you know, you have fossils at the bottom and rock layers that are supposed to be 500 million years old. And at the very top, you have mammals, reptiles, vertebrates. And somewhere in the middle, you know, you might have the Cretaceous period, they call it, where you see dinosaurs. But I was making the point that the age of the Earth is assigned by the age of the rocks.
Okay.
But in those very, very bottom rocks, for example, we see fossils, evidence of fossils that have been rapidly buried.
Right.
I mean, we find fish in the process of giving birth. They weren't giving birth over millions of years while they were slowly being fossilized.
Mm.
So when we see a fossil that's formed quickly, then intuitively we should think, well, hang on, it's buried in rock. That means the rock or the sediment around it also had to be deposited quickly. Right?
Right, so you think it's
and
some sort of a...
And we assign this millions of years age from right. the rock. Now, right. as I said, when we look at the geologic column, we see that as an order of burial from the global flood. And, as you know, we can see sediments lay down quickly. The sediments have a sorting effect. The physics of the granules seem to sort themselves out into layers. And this is real demonstrable science that we've seen occur in the present, you know, with catastrophes like Mount St. Helens, which I'll be talking about on Sunday night, and not just an unknown that we ascribe to the interpretation of these rock layers and fossils. So this is an exciting time to be a creationist. I've got to tell you, we're learning so much, particularly in a couple of key areas, in genetics and with cosmology. And by the evolutionists' own belief system, I believe, looking at their own uniformitarian assumptions, it's actually falsifying their own beliefs.
Well, Gary, while we have you on the show, you just brought up those two points, genetics and cosmology. Can you give us just a blurb or a blitz on those two issues? Maybe like just a one point, just let us know, what do you mean by that? Like, it's an exciting time to be a Christian who's a creationist with all of this science and all these tools we have. When you talk about genetics and cosmology, what are you aiming at? What are you talking about?
Okay, well, good example. One of our very close associates, Dr. John Sanford, a full Cornell professor, who's the inventor of the gene gun, and a world famous scientist, Bible believing creationist. For 13 years now, he's been studying something called genetic entropy. Now, let's just talk about a big concept. We all understand that evolution subscribes to the idea that in millions of years ago in a warm pond on Earth, you know, the first chemicals got together to form the first amino acids, the first proteins, the first cell, and all life is spontaneously generated from a common ancestor.
Right.
Now, in our DNA, we have billions of letters of complex coded information out of any one of the trillions of cells in your body. If I could take a strand of the DNA, you'd have about 3 billion letters. That's about 1,000 books worth of information. And all the letters have got to be in the right order to tell the cell to build, you know, another Luke, right? Now, what happens for evolution to occur, it says it has to be, the information has to be added to. We have to go from simple to complex. And we've all been taught something like natural selection.
That's right.
It is the mechanism. Creatures change over time. Well, creatures do change over time. But real genetics now shows that the information heads in the wrong direction. Because, you know, Luke, when you get married and you have children, your children in their reproductive cells inherit all of the genetic mistakes from you, all of the genetic mistakes and mutations, these are mistakes in the letters or copying mistakes, from all of your ancestors. Hmm. And so what happens, they're increasing with every generation. And that's why we're starting to see things like, you know, birth defects. Hmm. And people have all sorts of reactions to, you know, medicines and even, you know, chemicals we have in our food. It's starting to increase. Hmm. And it's a kind of genetic load. It's increasing and increasing and increasing. So, in fact, the human genome is actually devolving. It's not evolving. It's getting worse. And, of course, it always points to the fact that at some place in the past, it was better. It was perfect. Yeah. And it's heading in the wrong direction. We're not getting better. We're getting worse. And the bad news is ultimately the human race is ultimately doomed.
Yeah,
unless the Lord Jesus returns, there is no hope for humanity. And so, that's a direct, verifiable demonstration we can have from genetics today. Now, Darwin knew nothing, obviously, about the complexity of the cell. And genetics today is more like information technology.
So science is actually a tool of refutation for neo-Darwinian micromutation, macroevolution, that the idea that we've evolved from the soup, from fish to philosophers, just looking at what you're talking about in genetics, we're devolving, not evolving. Evolution is essentially this idea is it's a culling force. It pulls away, takes away from, doesn't add to and increase the information, but actually just takes away. Is that a correct way of putting that?
Well, natural selection, that's a term that evolutionists define. We would totally agree with natural selection. We don't think nature is some conscious living entity. But, you know, when we talk about the DNA molecule, it is so efficient at storing information that when God created each creature according to its kind, his kind, their kind, he was able to front load enough information on the DNA of every kind of creature to enable it to survive and adapt in a post-fall world. We see that. We see different types of dogs, different types of frogs, even human beings vary. But, you know, frogs don't turn into princes after a kiss from a beautiful girl. That's a magic trick.
That's right.
What happens is nature selects from features that are already present. Nothing new has ever been created. Huh. And, in fact, you can end up with creatures that are specialized to their environment, but in the process of being specialized, they will or can lose information that was present.
Awesome,
in the
Gary.
We'll
be populations. We'll be right back. Creation Ministries International, guys, get them.
Apology Radio will be right back.
Now, we must all fear evil men. But there is another kind of evil which we must fear most. And that is the indifference of good men.
We haven't really got a chance to talk about how cool it is. We have listeners internationally that pull down the shows, listen to them, share them with others. But we've got quite a few listeners, actually, that listen in Arizona, all over the state, essentially, to the show. We've got people from some pretty well-known, I won't bring up the names at the moment, but some pretty well-known organizations. You know who you are. Christians fighting in the arena of politics, trying to bring some sanity and some righteousness into society around us. And so for those of you guys who know who you are, we know you're listening, and we're very happy. And so we're just excited to be back here with Gary Bates. Gary from Creation Ministries International. Get him at creation.com. Gary, you were talking to us about the exciting things that modern science is, that the tools we have in modern science are really displaying to us in the area of genetics. But you also mentioned cosmology. Yeah. What are you referring to there?
Okay, well, most people have heard of the Big Bang. This is the evolutionary development of the cosmos. And, you know, when I went to school, I was told the Big Bang occurred 5 billion years ago. And then through my schooling, it went out to it went from 5 to 10 to 15 to 20. Now it's back to 14.3 billion years. People hear the term Big Bang, they think, again, it's about real science. That's the type of stuff you can do tests on and experiment with. You can't. The mere fact you hear those changing, you know, dates or time lapse, time frames shows you that it's a very, very fluid concept. Mm. And what we find today is that if anything's evolving, it's just the Big Bang theory itself, because the Big Bang of 30 years ago is nothing like the Big Bang of today. And that's how kind of, you know, what science should do if we discover something we didn't know, you know, we discover something today we didn't know yesterday, we should be willing to change. Now, they do that when it comes to a Big Bang, but it's got to such an extent. Now, listen to this statement I'm about to make to you, and people can check it out for themselves. Obama's energy minister, Stephen Chu, was addressing a group of school children in South Australia a little while ago. And he made this statement. He said, "We know everything there is to know about the universe except what is dark matter and what is dark energy." Mm. Now, dark matter is some mysterious force in the universe that comprises something like 90% of the mass of the universe. But there's one big problem. We don't see it. We can't touch it. We can't taste it. Mm. But they think it's there. Otherwise, the universe would fly apart. But hang on, then how did the universe become the universe? Well, we've got to invoke something called dark energy, some mysterious force which pushes the universe apart, but then the rate of expansion is controlled by dark matter, and we get all these fudge factors. Now, the simple math of the Big Bang is not working out, so then they start to develop things like string theory, that the universe might exist in multiple brains or dimensions. None of this stuff has ever been observed. It's just esoteric mathematics to try to pop up a failing Big Bang. And in the last 10 years, there's been two secular conferences called Crisis in Cosmology. And, you know, these cosmologists almost sound like they're creationists because they're railing against the Big Bang. They say, it doesn't work. The more we discover about our universe, it's untenable.
Right.
Of course, they won't consider a supernatural explanation. But in short, 98% of the universe is supposed to be comprised of stuff that we can't even taste, touch, or see. Now, another example with cosmology. We see things called redshifts. When we look at galaxies, distant galaxies and nebula, there are wavelengths of light. And because these objects are moving away, the frequency of the wavelength means they're shifted to red in the spectrum. And varying, depending upon the varying redshift, they assign a distance to it. Now, everywhere we look out from in the universe, from our position here on Earth, it looks like every object is moving away from us in every direction. And simply that means the prima facie evidence says we must be actually somewhere near the center of the universe. Our Milky Way looks like it holds a special position. In fact, in my book, Alien Intrusion, I've got a quote from Edwin Hubble that says, we look like we are in a favored location. Hmm. He said, but the evidence of this must be avoided at all costs. It shows you there's a spiritual agenda.
That's right. The spiritual issue driving it.
It looks like
our
universe is somewhere near the center of the universe. That's what the evidence actually looks like. And they come up with
amazing,
very, very, very highly convoluted philosophical models to explain away that, and I mentioned some of those.
Gary Bates with Creation Ministries International, he mentioned their Alien Intrusion. I'm excited to pick it up this Sunday and read it. Come to Apologia Church this weekend, 5:30 east of rural in Guadalupe. Gary Bates, creation.com. Gary, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gary.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
The distant future, the distant future.
It is the distant future, the year 2000.
We are robots.
The world is very different ever since the robotic uprising of the mid-90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless it's a more colloquial situation with a few robo-friends. There is only one kind of dance, the robot.
And the robo boogie.
Oh, yes. Two kinds of dances.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world. The humans are dead.
We're back, ApologiaRadio.com. That's Flight of the Conchords. If you don't know, you should get to know. You should get to know, yes. We have Luke Pearson, Joy Temby, and my son Sage Durbin in the studio today. Hey, we're back. Hey, guys, get us at ApologiaRadio.com. That was awesome.
That was
Gary Bates.
Totally awesome.
Was the
yes.
bomb diggity. Yeah. I like that dude.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't get a chance to really talk about it. He had mentioned to us during one of the commercial breaks that he wrote a book called Alien Intrusion, and which I'm excited about. I haven't actually read the book, but I've got family members that are big into the alien stuff, and I have a brother that is just like huge into like, you know, an alien race seeded us here on the Earth, and that's where we've come from. So I've read a lot of the guys like Sitchin and these famous guys have read their stuff, and you know, just trying to be able to dialogue and speak. Today, you guys don't know how big this is. It's huge. The whole issue of like Planet Nibiru, Planet X, Nibiru and the Anunnaki. And if you're like, what are you talking about? Believe me, there are whole websites, people dedicated to this, spending hours upon hours making their own documentaries on YouTube, talking about the alien conspiracy. And Planet X is on its way back around again. Nibiru, Anunnaki, and all these different things. And the Earth is going to go into its next stage of human evolution, and it's just strange stuff. So I'm excited to read that book, Alien Intrusion, because there's not a lot of good Christian responses to that issue. So I'm thrilled about it. Joy, you look like you have something on the tip of your tongue. You got something you want to say?
Not really.
Okay. So I
do that from time to time, don't I?
Is we have guests sometimes. We're like, I think our audience recognizes when we're really holding back. Because someone like Gary, he seems like very, you know, very classy, mm-hmm. very astute kind of, you know, kind of dude. I'm Gary Bates. And, you know, we're like, so we're very serious with him. Like, there was a point where he was like, you know, when Luke has a child and it gets all of his defects, I opened my mouth to the microphone and I was like, never mind. I won't say that right now. Anyway, we're back. So what do you want to talk about? You have a comment you want to talk about? Apology or radio comments?
Yes.
I think last week's comment, as you get it, I think was one of the best I've ever heard.
Yeah,
Was that on the iTunes stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, if you guys don't know this, you can go to the iTunes, subscribe to it. You can leave comments and you can rate us on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's good too. And let me just say that last comeback song I dedicated to Sage because he's a robot.
Yeah. My son Sage. Yeah. He's very black and white.
Yes.
Very firm. Mm-hmm. Very committed.
Do you remember the show Small Wonder?
Yes. That was an old show, dude. Yeah,
I always think
of
Sage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of Alf when I think of you.
Is that because I eat cats?
No, because he's got the big old furry, like, little beard dangly thing. All right.
Dude, I used to love that
cats.
Show.
Yeah.
I don't really eat cats, just for the record.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're
going
to have PETA on us. If you
agree to disagree.
Yeah. Okay.
Commentary?
Yeah. Okay, so this one is titled Bearded Dragons, which is a cool title. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah. I actually have some of those living in my backyard. They're pretty cool.
Aren't they mean?
No.
They don't bite?
No.
I'd freak out.
Yeah.
I would absolutely.
Oh my gosh. The other day I went to open the gate to pull the garbage can out and there was one like on the latch and I went to touch it and I was like, ah! I like jumped back and it wouldn't move. I'm like trying to like hit it with a stick and it wouldn't move. And I was like, dude, you got to move. I got to open the gate.
He's just looking at you. What?
Yeah.
What?
Bring yeah. It. Yeah. Anyways. Okay. So Bearded Dragons. By iBrew Haha. Cool name.
That's a good name.
Yeah. So he said, here, this is good. He said, I learned about you from the Beardless Wonders at Backpack Radio.
Take that, vocab, vermin, Pastor Meanie.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
That's my new name for Pastor Bob. Pastor Mean
Bob
Stuff.
Bob Corleone.
Pastor Mean Stuff. Pastor Meanie Pants.
The godfather of radio.
Yeah.
The first I heard was the vermin prank.
Nice.
I then picked up on the friendly rivalry and thought I'd check you out because if you guys were okay with the pack at Backpack, which we're not okay with any sort of pack we've established.
Nope.
Then you must be okay. Here's my scoring. He scored us. Starting with 4 stars for great content, like the fantastic interview with Case Scott Oliphant.
That was good. Yes.
Let me get a -1 star for music that sounds like a broken pinball machine. That's Jeff. I'll give Jeff the credit on that. Plus one star for beards. He says my Commander Riker beard approves.
Mm. Commander well Riker. Good job.
Yeah. One star restored for replacing broken pinball machine music with some better selections.
Okay.
So maybe he's a fan of the like old school banjo music or something.
I think he likes Guy on a Buffalo.
Guy on a Buffalo, and probably from the sounds of him with his derogatory remarks, he probably liked the KJV only rap thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Baby got book.
Yeah.
And then finally, five star total, I must get my head examined, apparently, he says.
Mm. I don't know what that means.
I don't know either, but we'll go with it. So, thank you.
Well, hey, we're grateful for all our fans.
Yeah.
For real. You can share the episodes, by the way, guys. Have them liked and shared on Facebook. Get the word out. The whole goal of this show is to really equip and educate the Christian community to reach the world with the gospel, to really come at the world with the gospel in sort of an aggressive and intentional way. And to answer the hardest questions that come to us as Christians, that's why this show exists. And so that's what we're doing. And we like to talk about a lot of current event issues. And you guys want to go first or I'll go? You want to go?
I'll go since it's related to Dr. Bates.
Okay.
Okay, so Jeff actually didn't see this, so this is going to be new to him. I saw it, I believe Douglas Wilson shared it. And it's from phys.org, as in like P-H-Y-S. Like science.
Nice. Phase. Okay.
Yeah. But it's not like a creation like website. It's evolution. Okay. So
gotcha.
So
is it like fizz, not like bubbling stuff, but like thought kind of stuff, but it's not like fat FAT, it's more like PHAT. So it's like the fat version of fizz. PHIS.
Sure.
You see what I did there?
Yeah, that was good. Okay,
do you have any fake applause right there?
Okay, so anyway, so basically they've discovered, and here I'll show you the picture.
Maybe they're looking at that big butt of yours.
Well, calm down, Mr. President. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so they discovered, and it's like this like common garden insect. It's called a plant hopper. So I don't know. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Okay.
They probably have mullets.
Well, yeah. A plant hopper.
Yeah. Okay, right. So they've discovered, and I just showed you the picture of like some super zoomed in microscope. They actually have gears in their legs to make them like super jump. They've discovered these gears, okay, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And so at the beginning they say, where'd it go? The finding demonstrates that gear mechanisms previously thought to be solely man-made have an evolutionary precedent.
Ooh.
Scientists say this is the first observation of mechanical gearing in a biological structure. So, amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, you know, the whole article is like talking about these things. And then at the end, where'd it go? It says, these gears are not designed, they are evolved.
Mm-hmm. Make sure we let you know that.
Yeah, representing high speed and precision machinery evolved from synchronization in the animal world.
Yeah, yeah. We know it looks so much like design.
Yeah.
We need to forewarn you, it is not designed.
Yeah.
We cannot allow that.
Previously, we thought that anything like this had to be designed, had to be man-made, but apparently we are wrong.
Very complex, very smart, very intelligent, super. Yeah.
They looked at like clocks and gear machines and thought, seems like that would improve my fitness. I should probably evolve to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should probably get me some gears.
Amazing.
Some gears. Amazing.
So it's called a plant hopper?
Yeah.
That sounds like a vegan on a restaurant tour. Oh, plant hopper.
Wow.
A vegan on a restaurant tour.
That was for you, Joy.
That was funny.
That was good.
Thank you very much.
You were like, yo, giddy.
Yeah, I'm looking up and writing it down. Vegan on a restaurant tour.
Well done. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so hey, let's talk about, can I talk about something?
Yeah, I just wanted to share that.
Implications of the evolutionary worldview. Richard Dawkins on the Atlantic Wire, What Matters Now. Richard Dawkins defends mild pedophilia again and again. Richard Dawkins defended mild pedophilia in an interview this weekend. And while the quote itself is quite jarring, especially to those who look to Dawkins for his influential writings on atheism, but haven't noticed some of his other strange stances, it's far from the first time that the scientist has launched a defense of the behavior or talked about his own abuse at the hands of boarding school teachers. First, here's what Dawkins said to the Times magazine. Ready? Here you go. Referring to his early days at a boarding school in Salisbury, he recalled how one of the unnamed masters pulled me, quote, on his knee and put his hand inside my shorts. He said other children in his school peer group had been molested by the same teacher, but concluded, and here's Dawkins' quote, I don't think he did any of us lasting harm. And here's his quote in full. I am very conscious that you can't condemn people of an earlier era by the standards of ours, just as we don't look back at the 18th and 19th centuries and condemn people for racism in the same way as we would condemn a modern person for racism. I look back a few decades to my childhood and see things like caning, like mild pedophilia, and can't find it in me to condemn it by the same standards as I or anyone would today, he said. He said the most notorious cases of pedophilia involve rape and even murder and should not be bracketed with what he called, quote, just mild touching up. Amazing. Now, what's interesting here is the fact that you will have atheists, agnostics, secularists hear Dawkins say something like this, and all of a sudden they pull back and revolt against it. But what I want to say is that he's only being mildly consistent with his atheism.
Right.
He's not even being full-blown consistent. Mm-hmm. He's just sort of moving a little closer to being mildly consistent with it. And as soon as he says, you know, I can't find myself in me to condemn it, just some mild touching up, people recognize, because the image of God is irreversible. Mm. You can't erase it. They revolt against that. You can't even talk about pedophilia in that way. Like, mild touching up is in any way a moral issue. But don't forget, Dawkins' famous quote, there is no good, there is no evil, there is only blind and pitiless indifference. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a man who believes that fundamentally, that there is no good, there is no evil, only blind, pitiless indifference. And when he starts to move over into his, like, well, mild touching up, I can't find in myself to condemn it, and people start, you know, revolting against it, you can't say that, you can't say that. What's that just showing? Inconsistency. Because honestly, think about it for a second. If, like Bates said, Dawkins believes we've all evolved from the soup, then there is no good or evil action. There's only what is, and Dawkins is only being slightly consistent with it.
Yeah.
Well, there is some consistency as far as the whole, like, societal morality thing, because I guess if he did have some sort of morality, he would believe that it comes from society. So what society deems is okay is what's okay.
Right.
So I guess when he's being consistent, you know, to a degree, when he says that you can't hold people in the past accountable for things, like, because it just wasn't the same. But in his worldview, while that might kind of jive, I would say, so are we not supposed to consider the Holocaust a horrific act because it happened years ago? That may, at that time, that was more, I don't know, it happened. So
yeah. And there's an evolving social morality in his system.
Yeah.
There's an evolving understanding. Like, for example, I can't condemn those old racists like we would do today. Guess what? As a Christian, I can. Mm-hmm. I can.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to, because I have an objective standard. I can condemn any action of anybody in history, no matter what the name, even if they name the name of Christ, I could say that was against God's word. I have an objective standard, and I can do the same, and it's consistent, because the character and nature of God is consistent. And so while in atheism you have this sort of morality that's in flux, it's always changing, it's never firm or fixed, you could have mild pedophilia that just maybe, okay, maybe I can't condemn the old racist like I do today, because, you know, it's all in flux, it's all changing, it's all dependent upon what we think or what we believe, completely refuted by the biblical worldview. We're going to be back with Joy the Girl, Luke Pearson, talking about some really exciting stuff. Starbucks, the Messiah, and other tantalizing, delicious topics. We'll be right back. Bring your beard. ApologiaRadio.com.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward? Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America, One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free, how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America, One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
Dog goes woof, cat goes meow, bird goes tweet, and mouse goes squeak. Cow goes moo, frog goes croak, and the elephant goes toot. Ducks say quack, and fish go blub, and the seal goes ow, ow, ow. But there's one sound that no one knows. What does the fox say?
All right. I want to just say for the record. For the record. That was Luke Pearson's song selection.
But what does the fox say?
Yeah, that's a big question. It's a mystery. Mm-hmm.
Well, at the end they show us.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. You're right.
Yeah. So that was what the fox
What
say?
Does the fox say?
Yeah. What does the fox
yeah.
say? Chris is making sure that I make sure I enunciate.
Yeah.
Fox.
What does the fox say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good song. I love it.
I love it. My daughter.
Okay, I'll confess. I watched it like twice yesterday by myself.
Oh, yeah. I do. Yeah. My daughter wants to watch it like nonstop. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played it in my car.
How do you do
that? Over the speakers.
Oh, because you have this new car where you can connect probably your phone to the car. Mm-hmm. Is it? Yeah. Yep. That must be nice. Yeah. Let me just say right now. I'm very glad, praise God, that you got your new vehicle with nice ice-cold air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It just, as of yesterday, my air conditioning in the front of my car, the fan decided not to blow or nothing. So now I'm driving around while it's still hot in Arizona with no air conditioning in the front.
Man.
And it is brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Brutal. Mm-hmm. Brutal. I mean, I'm telling you, I was soaked, literally soaked in sweat yesterday.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I was actually... I got at one point, like 30 minutes in drive, I'm just angry. I was like, I'm going to pull over. I'm gonna get in a fight.
Well,
I'm just gonna get a fight.
That's why they say there's like a higher percentage of road rage here in Arizona because people are
hot. Just because you're angry.
And they all carry guns. And
me too. Okay. Hey, speaking of, you brought it. You guys see the perfect segue.
I know.
Look at you, Joy. It's like you've done this before.
Done.
We're going to talk about... a couple things. Where do we go first? There was a shooting at the Washington Navy Yard. Let's talk about that first. The Washington Navy Yard, very important. I'll just read you a clip here from this is, I believe, CBS News. As investigators look into the history of Aaron Alexis, the man believed to be responsible for the Washington Navy Yard shooting that killed 12 and wounded 8, a portrait of a disturbed man with a history of mental illness issues has emerged. Alexis appears to not have left behind a manifesto or suicide note. So investigators are relying on what they find in his personal history to explain why such a tragedy occurred. And here's a little clip from CBS News that sort of describes what took place this Monday at the Washington Navy Yard. Let me get it pulled up here. Let me go ahead and reload this right here. It's important to discuss as Christians because, you know, we're the only ones, I think, that have an answer as to why this is an immoral act. We're the only ones that have any kind of response, I think, as to what's really wrong with this sort of thing. And you know, people talk about mentally disturbed or how do we solve this problem in the future? You know, I think we need to have an answer. And we're going to talk about issues like gun control. Because
John Miller has been putting together the story of how the killer struck the headquarters of Navy Sea Systems Command.
Here we go.
It appears that Aaron Alexis planned his attack very carefully in the days leading up to his rampage. Once he entered the building with that hidden weapon, he seemed to turn the very training the Navy gave him against them.
Police say it appears Alexis headed straight for the fourth floor that overlooks an atrium that was filled with employees having breakfast or coffee. Investigators believe he chose that spot because it offered a position of tactical advantage, allowing him to shoot down into the atrium or across onto other walkways. Alexis stayed there until he was confronted by responding police and security officers. A D.C. police officer exchanged shots with him and was wounded. NCIS agents confronted Alexis and fired. Alexis took to the stairwells, moving from level to level of the atrium, continuing to shoot. Alexis shot a security officer and took his weapon. Once he left the atrium, teams of police searched with no contact for a long time. Some estimate as much as 15 to 20 minutes. Police searched until a team made up of a D.C. police officer and a U.S. Park police officer suddenly came face to face with him in an upper floor hallway. They opened fire, killing him.
Police say within 7 minutes they had reached the scene and engaged in the initial gun battle with Alexis. Within half an hour, Alexis was killed.
Okay, so there's the shooting at the Washington Navy Yard. Aaron Alexis comes into a place with a hidden weapon. I've heard reports of initially the first day they were all the liberal left media was talking about AR-15s, and it turns out it wasn't an AR-15. Mm-hmm. So it was just a shotgun, I believe, and some pistols. But he makes his way in. And let's talk about this for a second. You have government employees that are essentially disarmed, is what it is. They're mm-hmm. in this atrium, and they're disarmed. They're not legally allowed because of legislation pushed through in the 90s, I believe it is, that sort of restricts someone in this sort of capacity to carry a weapon while on duty like this, which is interesting.
And yeah, so, you'd think if there was anywhere where people could defend themselves, it would be
right, military, Washington yeah. Navy Yard. Yeah, you would think, well, can't they at least carry weapons? But apparently no. And so legislation was pushed through that disarmed these people. And so they were left as victims and sitting ducks. Honestly, he's above them, yeah. shooting down at them, and they have no way to defend themselves, and they're just victims. And it took how long? About 7 minutes for help to get there. So the armed help, the ones that actually had the ability to fight against this man and have an equalizer, took 7 minutes. So mm-hmm. he had 7 minutes of free reign. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about this in the sense of, biblically speaking, about self-defense. Okay, first and foremost, let's talk about that. And by the way, let's obviously say, first and foremost, as we talk about this issue, that it's a tragedy. It's an evil thing for a murderer to commit such an act. And as a Christian, right. you have a basis, again, to say so. So I can call this evil. The unbelieving worldview can't. So while they live in a twisted, weird way of saying, well, it's bad, but not really because we're
fish. Or
they
can call it a mild shooting spree,
yeah, or,
if they so desire, yeah. Richard Dawkins.
Or mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I would say, I would call it sin and a murderous dark heart, first and foremost. Let's talk about from a biblical perspective. You know, the Bible talks about in Exodus 22:2, you can kill a thief found breaking and entering into your home, and that's not murder. It's justified because of the evil action being committed against you. Judges 15, there's a story of Samson killing many Philistines with the jawbone of an ass. He was hardcore, mm-hmm. pipe-hitting guy right there. Luke 11:21, Jesus refers to a strong man armed, keeping his palace and his goods are in peace. Jesus refers to that as a good thing, someone armed, guarding their palace and his goods are in peace. Nehemiah chapter 4, the builders of the wall armed themselves. Luke 22:36, Jesus tells his disciples to buy a sword. And so there is, of course, an abundance of scriptures that describe God-given natural right to self-defense. Now, look at what happened. What is the argument always of those that would sort of reject what the Bible has to say about self-defense and weapons and to be able to defend yourself against the evil man? What is the argument always? It's always, well, we have police officers and military that should own these weapons. They're the ones that should be armed. We don't need them. The general public doesn't need them. Now, there's a whole show that could be done on that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's think about this incident. You've got 12 people dead, 8 injured, correct? Yeah, 12 dead, 8 injured, I think, is the official numbers for now. And what? 12 dead, 8 injured, and what were the circumstances? Washington Navy Yard
mm-hmm.
took them 7 minutes. The armed people took 7 minutes to get there. That's 7 minutes of victims,
mm-hmm.
okay? Just victims. He was able to get a gun into a place that has security clearance and everything else. So he was able to make it past armed guards, people with weapons, to have 7 minutes of free reign on victims with weapons, deadly weapons. So there's 7 minutes there where basically the idea of having only the military and police and everything else train people with these weapons just fell.
Yeah.
So it took 7 minutes to kill 12 people, wound 8. So you guys want to talk about this? I mean, I think that this incident right here will be used by gun control advocates to try to advocate for more gun control, but it is exactly the strongest argument against gun control. Because what do you have at play here? Yeah. You have military and police, essentially, people with weapons, able to respond, 7 minutes to do so, a person that had to have high security clearance to get into a position that did not use a weapon that was a fully automatic assault rifle or something like that. And what? People still died.
Yeah.
And all the pieces were in place that would give sort of like the liberal utopia. Like, you know, and where did it happen, by the way? It happened in a place with some of the highest gun control laws that exist.
Exactly.
So where,
which is just shows you that if you're whatever you want to call it, mentally ill, sinful, if you don't want to follow legislation, you're not going to follow legislation. So what is it? It's just a piece of paper to the person that doesn't want to follow the legislation.
Yeah, I'm sure when he walked down that hallway above the atrium, that someone was like, "Excuse me, sir. Sir, that gun is restricted."
Mm-hmm. And he was like,
shucks. Let me, I'll go ahead and turn back. I'll turn back around and go put it back in my trunk. I apologize. I was going to do this whole shooting spree thing, and then I didn't realize the laws of the state.
So it's really just disarming lawful citizens that follow legislation. Yep. But if they're lawful, they're probably not likely to go into a place and shoot up the place.
So where does it come back to? It comes down to an unbiblical anthropology and a biblical view of man, right? The idea is, well, if we can just simply disarm people, then we'll be all good. What does it not recognize? It does not recognize the sinful, fallen heart of a human being that they don't want to obey laws. And so what we end up doing when we restrict gun rights to people is we end up having 12 victims killed, 8 wounded, because we've disarmed innocent people to give the guns to a murderer. And again, think about this scenario. Is this man got into a facility where there had to be high security clearance? Mm-hmm. He got into a facility where he was able to hide the weapons as he came in. He got into a facility that had armed responders. And what was he still able to do? He was still able to kill people and everything else. And so all the pieces were in place for a sort of liberal utopia.
Yeah.
When I say liberal, I'm not trying to get political. I'm saying that's the argument of the liberal side is that we should gun control and everything else. And I'm not trying to be the right wing. Believe me, I don't want to even associate myself. I want to say I'm a Christian that wants biblical values and laws in place. And you have everything in place for this to be the perfect moment for no massacre. Mm-hmm. And what happened? A massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Because we fail to recognize the fallen heart of people and that innocent people have the God-given right and I think responsibility to be able to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be right back and talk about more kookiness with the CEO of Starbucks wanting to make those who sip his lattes victims.
Abhor to your radio. We'll be right back.
Give each other kisses, holding hands and walking side by side. But every time I try to charm a lady, she runs away. What am I doing wrong? Is it the dubstep in my song when I go?
Gotcha. That's awesome. Good job. That was excellent choice, Luke. Very good. And he's like, dude, I got to play this song. You're going to love it. So does that get all of our listeners were like, what was happening here? I thought this was like, oh, there it is. We're back. ApologiaRadio.com. Hey, guys, support this movement. I'm going to encourage you guys, if you're blessed by these shows, and many of you are, I'm going to encourage you guys to go to ApologiaRadio.com. There's a donate tab. Donate to this ministry. We are listener supported, and we need your prayers. We need your love. We need your support to be on the air as we are now. I know a lot of times you listen to a show like this and you probably think, well, there are probably other people that are supporting this show. And the truth is we're dependent upon every listener to really join with us in this ministry. And so if you feel led to support this ministry of Apologia Church, getting the gospel into the world, please do so at apologiaradio.com. We're back with Joy and Luke and me talking about the gun control issue, the Washington Navy Yard, 12 murdered, 8 injured by a madman, sinful person that went in past armed responders into a place with security clearance to stand above victims in an atrium to basically blast away. And why? Ultimately, because of his sinful heart. And but what are the other circumstances that could have prohibited such a thing? I want to argue if we would allow people to always be armed at their discretion, I would say probably best to be in some sort of a minor open carry situation or a concealed carry. At least give them the opportunity to defend themselves. We would be able to avoid these sorts of things. Imagine for a second if, say, let's say 45% of the people in the atrium were armed. 45% were armed.
Which, considering their likely profession,
yeah.
would probably be
military.
Even a low number.
Yeah, yeah. So say 45% were armed, less than half of the people were armed. As soon as this sinful, evil, dark-hearted man started firing shots off, what could have happened? You would have had at least half of those people mm-hmm. firing back, which would have meant what? Maybe he would have killed one person, which would have still been a tragedy. But it would have been a glorious, righteous ending to a tragedy. Mm-hmm. A wicked man tried to murder innocent people in that situation, and what would have happened? He would have been killed almost yeah. instantly by gunfire coming back at him. But instead, we had 7 minutes of horror where he was able to just basically slaughter
yeah.
as many people as he can get shots off of and as good as an aim as he was until first responders could get there. And then what happened? And then they were also shot at, and then the real gun battle took place. So when the good guys arrived with the guns, then the gunfight started. And what happened? They had him on the run. As soon as they showed up, what happened? They had him on the run. So when you take guns away from innocent people, you make them victims, all right? And you don't change the heart of society by disarming society.
Yeah.
It's not like everyone goes, oh, guns are gone. I guess we're all good now. Now, where are all these gun where are all these tragedies taking place? They're taking place in the what? Gun-free zones.
Mm-hmm.
When you have them take place at a school, what is that? Gun-free zone. Where does a madman know that he can go? To the place where there's only victims. Colorado, what took place there at the movie theater? Gun-free zone. When you look at all of these different instances of these gun slaughtering moments, what do you see? You see there where? Not in the places where the person knows that mostly everyone is armed. I just want to say this. Do things like this take place in Arizona? Yes, but you know what? A lot less. A right. lot less in Arizona, where the majority of the population out here knows that there are a lot of people armed out here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say, I got an example in that, you know, a couple of years ago when Senator Gabby Giffords was down in Tucson.
Right.
She, you know, someone came up and started shooting. And yes, there was a few people that got killed, but there was an armed citizen who took them down within minutes.
Right.
You know, before even the police and everyone else could respond.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it saved lives, ultimately. Yes, yeah. there was still a tragedy, but ultimately it saved lives. So I just want to use that as an example of a state that is allowed to carry weapons.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else, Joy, want to add to that? So so that brings me into the next interesting moment that I want to talk about and related to the issue of gun control and everything else. Did you guys get a chance to read the letter
yes.
from Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks? Mm-hmm. Anybody see that letter? Sage, you see that letter? You get a chance to read
it? I didn't
see
it. I've heard talk about it, but I didn't see it.
War in the world owes me a living.
This is. I read it, and as I read it, this is sort of the theme in the background.
Mail.
Howard Schultz,
wow.
CEO of Starbucks Coffee Company. This is on their official website. An open letter from Howard Schultz, CEO of Starbucks Coffee Company. He says, "Dear fellow Americans," like he's the president, they're addressing my fellow Americans, posted by Howard Schultz, Starbucks chairman, president, and chief executive officer. "Few topics in America generate a more polarized and emotional debate than guns." There's another one, Mr. Schultz, that also generates a very polarized and emotional debate, and it's one that your company publicly supports and advocates
for. Actually, a couple different ones.
Yeah, so let's talk about the fact that few topics. Let's talk about this is the one that you actually are not on the side of, and so you're speaking out against. The issues of the LGBT gay marriage debate and everything else is your company is fine to support and to fight politically for those issues. But okay, here's one with guns. In recent months, Starbucks stores and our partners' employees who work in our stores have been thrust unwillingly into the middle of this debate. That's why I'm writing today with a respectful request that customers no longer bring firearms into our stores or outdoor seating areas. He didn't want you inside with it, and he doesn't want you outside. He would prefer victims. Thank you very much. From the beginning, our vision at Starbucks has been to create a third place between home and work where people can come together to enjoy their peace and pleasure of coffee and community. Our values have always centered on building community rather than dividing people. Really? Let me read that again. I'm not sure I read that correctly. Our values have always centered on building community rather than dividing people. Wasn't Starbucks involved in the whole Prop 8 situation and the political protests and everything else? And where isn't Starbucks one of the greatest advocates for gay marriage? In the sense of like a company, I believe so. And our values have always centered on building community rather than dividing people. When our stores exist to give every customer a safe and comfortable place, despite respite from the concerns of daily life. Excuse me, guys. So every customer a safe and comfortable respite. So if I'm going to say real fast, if I'm disarmed, I'm safer disarmed than I am armed. So if a madman comes into Starbucks at any point and could easily happen, it happens at Washington Navy Yards. If a madman comes in to rob Starbucks or is just a crazed, lunatic, sinful man, I am safer as a customer when I'm disarmed. Okay. We appreciate that there is a highly sensitive balance of rights and responsibilities surrounding America's gun laws, and we recognize the deep passion for and against the open carry laws adopted by many states. In the United States, open carry is the term used for openly carrying a firearm in public. For years, we have listened carefully to input from our customers, partners, community leaders, and voices on both sides of this complicated, highly charged issue. And when we come back, you guys are going to hear Howard Schultz, CEO of Starbucks, would like you to be disarmed as you sip your latte. He no longer wants to abide by the open carry laws in the states that have them. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Ooh, Lord, and I travel so hard. Ooh, Lord, and I travel so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God.
It's interesting because when you think through the way our culture thinks today, as opposed to how it was just 200 years ago, 100 years ago, with regard to weapons, it's an amazing thing because when you hear somebody suggesting, no, basically every person that's law-abiding should be armed, pretty much you should always have access to a weapon. People say, well, is that really the way to go? Is that really the way we should be doing this? I want to say, listen, my view and hope is that peace with God leads to peace among men, and that we will be able to sleep with our windows unlocked someday. Because we can essentially trust that sanctification and transformation is going on. But understand that in the midst of all of this fallen world, there are evil people with evil intentions. The Bible says in Romans chapter 3, what is the description of humanity in the fallen condition? It says their feet are swift to shed blood. Mm-hmm. That is part and parcel to the biblical worldview. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Now, if that, biblically speaking, is the biblical view of man, men and women in a fallen state, is that they are not righteous, they are non-God-seeking, and their feet are swift to shed blood, then I have to understand, as a person in that fallen world, that the Bible also gives us the right of self-defense. That is a personal right to self-defense in defending my goods, my family, myself, and that allows for me to do away with the opportunities that these people have. When you know as a killer that there is a location A that has armed people that will shoot back and they will defend the innocent. And there's location B where they are disarmed. Know this. It's not like you decide, I just won't go anywhere. You go to the place that's disarmed. And what's compelling to me is to have a man like the CEO of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, that's his name, correct? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that about the open carry issue. Listen to what he says here. He says, our company's longstanding approach to open carry has been to follow local laws. We permit it in states where allowed, and we prohibit it in states where those laws don't exist. We have chosen this approach because we believe our store partners should not be put in the uncomfortable position of requiring customers to disarm or leave our stores. We believe that gun policy should be addressed by government and law enforcement, not by Starbucks and our store partners. Recently, however, we've seen the open carry debate become increasingly uncivil and, in some cases, even threatening. Pro-gun activists have used our stores as a political stage for media events misleadingly called Starbucks Appreciation Days that disingenuously portray Starbucks as a champion of open carry. To be clear, we do not want these events in our stores. Some anti-gun activists have also played a role in ratcheting up the rhetoric and friction, including soliciting and confronting our customers and partners. For these reasons, today we are respectfully requesting that customers no longer bring firearms into our stores or outdoor seating areas, even in states where open carry is permitted, unless they are authorized law enforcement personnel. Okay, so let's talk about it. He would like customers in states that have constitutional carry laws, that are open carry laws, he would like you to disarm, even though the Constitution of the United States of America gives you the right to defend yourself and bear arms. And even though the state you may actually be living in has open carry or constitutional right. carry laws, he would like to negate the U.S. Constitution and your state laws by telling you, don't defend yourself, be a victim.
Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately what's behind this. He might say it makes someone uncomfortable to see a gun. Well, that might be just a problem, is that we've only allowed now the bad guys to have the guns. We think guns now belong in the hands of police and those other bad guys that are out there, but they're scattered around. We don't know where they're at. Well, I think that more good guys should have guns.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I believe. I think good guys should have guns. I think our society needs to change its mindset on a gun and realize that there are bad guys out there and good guys need to defend themselves. Now, obviously, I'm using good guys in a very general sense. We're all sinners. We're all fallen. But I'm saying in scenarios like this, there is a good guy and there is a bad guy. It's almost like in schools today. You can just bring up these incidents ad infinitum, these incidents where a fight breaks out in school. The two school kids are caught fighting. Well, both get suspended. Even though you'll have 15 witnesses that say, Popo over here came and punched this kid, right? Just randomly slammed his head into a bench and the kid was defending himself. And they say, well, you're both suspended for fighting. Really? So there's no good guys or bad guys anymore. Everybody's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. You can't defend yourself. Even if a bad guy comes to get you, you should just take it. Be a victim. That's the society we live in today. We need to change our thinking to a more biblical perspective where there are good guys, bad guys, innocent people, and those who are criminals. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
When I whet my flashing sword and my hand takes hold in judgment, I will take vengeance upon mine enemies, and I will repay those who hate me. O Lord, raise me to thy right hand and count me among thy saints, and I shall count thee among my favored sheep, and you shall have the protection of all the angels.
So you were all laughing. It's what you don't realize is that was a very emotional moment for me. I said there's a bully named Popo that starts beating on a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That was me. Not Popo, But that was me when I was a kid. I just brought up an incident. There was a guy named Popo when I was like 6 years old, and he was like bullying me in school and like punched me. His name was Popo. What kind of a bully name is that? I mean, it's like, I got beat up in school today. By who? Who did this? His name is Popo.
What country was this in?
I was actually in Holland.
Isn't that weird?
Isn't that weird? It was in Holland? Isn't that weird?
I didn't plan that. That just happened organically.
It did. But yeah, I was, you know, that's interesting though. And I wasn't suspended though, and but you know, that's, I think we need to talk about that. Like the whole idea, like, you know, if there's fighting like in school, like, you know, there's no idea of a bully anymore. Where's the bully? You know, he's the bully. He should get suspended. I should be able to defend myself. You know, it's interesting that our society thinks like this. Is like, let's take away the guns from the innocent people, the ability for them to defend themselves. Why? Because it might make a few people uncomfortable. You know what I think of makes someone more uncomfortable is when this wicked man walks into Starbucks with a gun. That's going to make a lot of people very uncomfortable, especially knowing that no one's armed to defend themselves against said madman. And the police will take maybe 10 minutes to show up. So we have 10 minutes of just a shooting spree with innocent people now disarmed. Luke, Joy?
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I was planning to go, and then you looked at Joy, so it was confusing for a second.
Luke, go ahead.
I'm glad that you played that clip, actually, where he talks about a sword. Because I think we need to. There's people that are probably listening, like, okay, so how do we answer this biblically? And you know, we talked about this before on by far the most hot and sweatiest show we've ever done with our buddy Doug Giles.
Yeah,
and he brought up a great verse. I believe it's in Mark, correct? Where Jesus told the disciples basically to sell everything, make sure you got a cloak and a sword,
right,
and go do my work.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great verse to use in response. You know, even Jesus said, make sure you're ready to protect yourself. Obviously, they didn't have guns. Sword would have been the weapon of choice.
Yeah. And it's a spiritual. Obviously, there's a deep spiritual understanding behind that verse. But he makes it on the back of the idea that it's a good thing and a righteous thing to own a weapon for self-defense.
Yeah. Exactly.
So whatever spiritual application Jesus has there to that, and whatever is deeper behind it, is made on the back of the idea that a personal right to self-defense is a godly thing.
Yeah. And then also I was going to say, Starbucks also, they give lots of money to Planned Parenthood, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. There is money that goes from them to Planned Parenthood. Yeah.
So
at least has in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he said in his letter that they've had a policy of not wanting to divide people. Clearly that must be a metaphor, because they've given lots of money to actually physically dismember and physically divide babies in the womb.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that as you're reading, then I was like, oh my gosh, that's like a complete like ironic moment.
Yeah. It is. It's a convoluted worldview. Yeah. I mean, if you live like this whole idea says we want to have places where everyone should feel relaxed and comfortable. You know, can I be honest here for a second? You know why I struggle so much with this? It's because, like, I moved out to Arizona in 1996. And from 1996 until probably 2007, I frequented Starbucks, like, every day, several times a day. They were my favorite place. I always talked about them. I always went and grabbed Starbucks a couple times a day. When I was teaching karate for years, I would get tired of teaching all day long. I'd go get a cup of coffee between the class to get some coffee to get recharged again. And, like, you know, I used to love Starbucks. I love the smell of their coffee. I love all their stuff. I used to just love Starbucks, promote Starbucks. But, like, as we move further on, I drink mostly yerba mate now. But as we move further on, like, I struggle with this. Here's why. Because I would love to frequent Starbucks on a regular basis. My wife loves their pumpkin spice lattes. Mm. It's like fall for her, like the pumpkin spice lattes. So we struggle with this issue because, you know, I look at stuff like this and I think that you're actually, like, warring against my worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really are. Like, you're making me uncomfortable. Like, you're making me think, well, if I go into Starbucks, I get a disarm. What if someone, like, tries to – I mean, I'm not always in a freak-out state, but I also am, like, you know, in a state of, like, I'm aware of my own family, my need to defend them. It's like, I don't want to have to walk into your store thinking I'm a victim now. I don't want to have to walk into your store thinking that the money that I'm paying to buy this wonderful cup of coffee is now going to slaughter babies or going to support the gay marriage issue. Why can't, as a store, you not get involved in these public issues? Why can't you just sell coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and that's where, I mean, in the letter, he said Starbucks was always designed to be the third place. So work, home Starbucks.
Right.
But it's not designed to be the third place for everyone.
Right.
It's designed to be your third place if you don't carry a gun at work or at home.
Right.
But if you carry a gun at work or at home,
yeah,
then Starbucks isn't your third place.
That's right.
And they are dividing you.
Yeah.
They're dividing people who can't use Starbucks as their third place.
That's right.
It's just not. I understand the whole diplomacy of certain things that he says, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that it's, there's just, I don't even know exactly what to call it, but he says also in the letter, like, I need to make a point that this is simply a request. They can't legally require you to not open carry.
Right.
So it's kind of almost, he says it knowing that someone is going to be made uncomfortable. He says he can't request that his Starbucks employees confront people that open carry guns were illegal, but people are going to be confronted. So someone is going to be made uncomfortable because you made this request. If it's not legally binding,
no.
What is the point of making this request to right. open carry states? What is the point other than to make people enraged or there's no, I mean,
he
even
just,
if,
yeah, you're right. He's dividing here.
Yeah.
But who's he dividing? Those who believe in the Second Amendment, those who believe in a natural right of self-defense. By the way, I say this, I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable with my gun.
No,
I carry a gun most of the time and I don't have any intention of making anybody uncomfortable. And I don't really think that I do. Like, I'll give you an example. I go to a Fry's grocery store every single night virtually to pick up stuff or whatever. And all the employees there love me. And they know me by name. I know them by name, the security guard and everything else. I open carry in there all the time. And you know what? Actually, some of them have told me it makes them more comfortable that they have someone like me in that area where I live, which there's some dangerous spots where I live. They said that it makes them comfortable that they have someone like me. They know I'm a pastor who carries a weapon because it's a dangerous area.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even said, like, we're glad, you know, like this is the guy. Like, and they're pointing out, this is the guy. He's a pastor. He carries that. They're like, no, we love it, man. Like, it's great because, like, this is a dangerous place. You have all kinds of, like, seedy characters that, like, hang out around that grocery store at night that make it dangerous for employees. They're happy to see a citizen they know is a good citizen carrying a weapon. But in this situation with Howard, what's his Schultz? He's dividing me because now I feel like, well, I can't go there now.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to get your coffee, but like, you know,
but legally you can still walk in open carrying,
but he makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly. So there's really no point to address this to open carry states other than to make people that open carry uncomfortable.
Yeah. And by the way, this is a little side thing real fast. every state is an open carry state.
Yeah.
Except for the state laws that violate the Constitution. Yes, yeah. So technically every state is an open carry state. They just have state laws that are sort of infringe on the real legal binding law of the country. Anyways, but yeah, you make a good point. He says, I am respectfully requesting that you don't open carry in my stores.
What he's saying is don't open, like, what he's saying is, I don't care about what the law says.
Right. Yeah. I don't want you to do it.
Yeah. I don't want you to do it.
Yeah. And it makes me uncomfortable because I'm not the kind of person that would say, well, I'm going to do it just to get in your face.
Yeah. Okay. So what is our response to it?
So my response
is,
do
we hold a rally in front of Starbucks and say, I'm going to bring my gun in no matter
what? No, my response is not to go to your store.
Yeah.
There's great coffee shops beside you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that my money's not going to go towards funding abortion. It's not going to go towards funding the destruction and dissolution of human marriage, God-given institution. And it's not going to go towards a place that disarms their citizens and makes them victims.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just go somewhere else. As a matter of fact, where I usually study, there's a Starbucks, and right across the way is another coffee shop that makes, I think, much better coffee. And free internet, and it's a great staff, and I love it. And I don't have to go to Starbucks. And now, you know, it's just more reason for me not to go to Starbucks. Someone else can. I'm not going to judge you as a Christian for going to Starbucks. I'm just saying, like, I think this is a fundamental problem in thinking in our society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and most of how we feel about guns, and I would say much less gun laws, just guns, when someone sees your gun.
Yeah.
Is just how we were, you know, what you've been brought up to think about. Actually, didn't Gary Bates just say the same thing about creationism versus evolution?
Sure.
It's your beliefs are based on what you were taught your life during in your life or your whole life or part of your life, whatever.
Hey, can I say something else too? Somebody might say, but Jeff, if you see someone walking around with a gun on their hip and you don't know them, you might feel really uncomfortable. Can I suggest something? The reason that makes somebody uncomfortable when they see somebody else with a gun on their hip is because they don't have one also.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, if we were all, mostly all, able to get access to a weapon at any moment, I'm not so uncomfortable when I see another guy carrying a weapon because I also have one.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of like one-upmanship or trying to be like, you know, the big bully in the block. It's that, you know what, I know that I can protect myself. You have a right to protect yourself. You know that if mostly everyone is protected, then there's not so much of a risk because somebody here has a weapon to defend against this guy if he goes, you know, crazy or bonkers. But the truth is, what's better? Here's the question to ask. What's better? That everybody's disarmed and only the bad guys have weapons and we're all victims, or that mostly everybody is armed and that great majority are pretty much good people that aren't going to shoot their guns?
Well, that's why when you see, we talked about earlier how right now the people that are carrying guns are the people that are ignoring legislation. So I think the idea in our society is that if you're carrying a gun, that must mean you're a crazy person because those are the only people that are carrying guns right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The only people that carry guns in our nation right now are people who are mentally ill or don't follow laws or whatever. So even if you are lawfully carrying a gun, people see it and they're like, well, are you crazy?
Are you
or
a bad
like
guy?
What? Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And if you look at this, the long running statistics, and anybody could look at these, look them up online, look at FBI statistics, guns are more often used in self-defense encounters and to ward off the bad guy than they are ever used in a situation like this that just came with the Washington Navy Yard and everything else. People will, in the media today, blow up and inflate these issues, which are very serious. No one's saying they're not destructive and serious and heartbreaking. But they will blow these issues up saying, look how awful it is. Look how many times it's happening. And the truth is, when you use that in comparison to people who are actually using guns to defend themselves and for hunting, it's a minuscule number in amount of times it's being used in an inappropriate way. Most of the time, gun deaths are from suicides, natural self-defense, and the sort like that. And these issues like these things – these are few and far between in comparison to how often they're used for good things.
Yeah.
And also, I believe with all my heart, a woman needs to carry a weapon because she needs an equalizer. She needs an equalizer. My wife was followed home the other day by some strange man. He followed her all the way to my front door with my kids in the car on his motorcycle. And I only found out about as he took off, but believe me, I would have been on my way out that door with a weapon, but guess what my wife didn't have in the car at the time? She didn't have a weapon. You know what she needed at that moment? An equalizer. Because there are bad guys that will follow you home sometimes on the road. Yeah. And so I think that everyone needs an opportunity, a God-given right, to defend themselves. And I wish that people at the Washington Navy Yard had that opportunity. Mm. And I think that this is an issue of justice. Ultimately, there's the final thing.
Yeah.
It's an issue of what is just in a society, giving a person the right to defend themselves. That's Joy Temby, the girl.
See ya.
I love your input, Joy. It's always awesome. And Luke the Bear.
Hi.
And my son, Sage Durbin.
I am a robot.
Yeah. All right, guys. Catch us at ApologiaRadio.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. We'll catch you next time. ApologiaRadio.com.